Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Warman. Mr. Ruth.
Yes, sir. May it please the Court, my name is Robert Ruth, and I represent Ibn Williams in this appeal. There are two basic issues for the Court to decide today, and the first is the remedy. I believe late last week, Mr. O'Shea and I filed a joint motion asking for a limited remand for the district court to make a representation. Would you do anything differently now in light of Kimbrough? And having reflected on that, I think that a limited remand is something that's unique to the plein air situation. And we don't have a plein air situation in this case. We raised this issue in the district court. In this court, we even cited Kimbrough. But we raised the specific issue of deviating from the 100-to-1 ratio because it's just too harsh. So I think that the limited remand is a bit of a hybrid that was invented when Booker came up. I'm not sure that a limited remand is the way to go upon further reflection. I think that to vacate the sentence and remand it because the court did not follow the guidelines set forth in Kimbrough.
Well, how would it be any different depending? Well, see, one of the things that we're going to be faced with, this is one of three Kimbrough cases this afternoon, but there are also other ones that have been in the process in our court, and I'm sure there may be opinions issued before we even get a chance to whoever the author is to write this one. And we're trying to get sort of a universal solution to this kind of problem. And how would it be any different if we just vacated it and remanded for resentencing as opposed to the limited remand?
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, the danger of giving it the limited remand is that the district court will feel bound by the limited nature of the remand and say, well, I might have given a different sentence under
Paladino,
different circumstances.
We've done that in Paladino, and judges routinely said they would give the same sentence, but we also had other judges said, no, I'd like to look at it.
Right. No, I think that as a practical matter, it might not make much difference if it's a limited remand. But what made me change my mind was I went back and I read Paladino, and I looked at the business of plein air, and that the limited remand is derived from the plein air standard and the fact that we're trying to determine if it affected substantial rights.
The issue wasn't raised.
The issue wasn't raised.
Yeah, in these cases, it is raised.
Right.
And that's the difference. I guess the other concern you might have is because I think, there are three of them, I think the judge said essentially the same thing in each one about he wasn't all bent out of shape about this 100-to-1 ratio.
Right. Well, you know what? That's another reason why I think that we see there's two ways that we win this case. Number one is Kimbrough. We asserted that the disparity is too great and the judge should sentence outside of the 100-to-1 ratio, and he rejected it out of hand. Now Kimbrough has come along and said that something, and he rejected it out of hand because of the case law. Kimbrough has come along and changed the case law and said, no, you can consider other ratios. You're not bound by the 100-to-1 ratio. So that's one reason why he was just wrong. We raised it. The judge was wrong. The law has changed. Now it should be vacated and remanded.
But Judge Shabazz didn't say, I totally agree with 100-to-1 ratio, or I don't think any other ratio should be considered. He was applying the existing case law. He said it wasn't an issue he could consider. Isn't that how he approached it?
Well, yeah, he didn't. He was, he spoke in general terms. He didn't give out specifics. But that does segue into the next reason why I think we're entitled to a vacation and a full remand, and that is that Judge Shabazz made it clear that he doesn't really buy into this whole Booker business quite yet. It's not a question of he doesn't understand the law. It's a question of the will. He sees it as Congress. Congress decides what the guidelines are, and by golly, I'm going to follow what Congress said. And he more or less said that. I mean, he even said at one point in our argument, in the sentencing, he said, Congress has the final say. And Congress has spoken, and that's it. Well, now, he used the word advisory. He used the buzzwords that he's supposed to use, but he showed by his actions that he just doesn't have the will to do it. He just won't look at the 101 ratio or look at the sentencing guidelines or look at any of this from the perspective that he's now required to look at it after Booker and now even more so after Kimbrough. So
what do you expect? You say, well, if we vacate the sentence, then we're supposed to do some sort of a direction of not throwing it back in the judge's lap, but telling him what to do and what not to do?
No, I don't think a direction is necessary. I think that just, and quite frankly, the reason why you vacate it isn't going to doesn't make that much difference, really, because it achieves the same result. You can say, well, we're vacating this sentence because we think the judge paid lip service to Booker, but he didn't really treat the guidelines as advisory. Or you can say, you can avoid that hot potato, which I'll concede that it's a difficult thing to do, and you can say, well, you know what? Kimbrough came along, they raised Kimbrough, the judge applied law as it was prior to Kimbrough, now the law has changed post-Kimbrough, so we're going to vacate it for resentencing. Either way achieves the same result. And the second route I would concede is a much easier, it's much more diplomatic, and so
if we take your route and it goes back to Judge Shabazz and he thinks about it and decides, well, gosh, you know, 100-1 isn't strict enough. There ought to be a greater sentence than the guidelines would allow for. Could he do that?
Well, I'm sure he could do it. And quite frankly, when Booker came along in the Western District, that sent shivers down the spines of many attorneys, fearing that would happen. But Judge Shabazz has shown that he is a guidelines judge through and through, and he doesn't view it as his place to deviate one way or the other from the guidelines.
Or that he agrees the guidelines were a reasonable determination of where a sentence ought to be for that particular conduct with those particular criminal histories.
Right. You know, and I guess I had this conversation with the U.S. attorney before we came in here today, and he was basically making the point that you're making. And my response is, that would be acceptable if every once in a while there was a deviation from the guidelines. But there's never a deviation from the guidelines. So if case after case after case after case, and lo and behold, the guidelines got it right, then you have to wonder, is this judge really take this seriously, this advisory nature? He always takes the advice of the guidelines. Is he really taking seriously the 3553 factors? And I think that eventually we'd have to conclude that he's really not.
Does your record show that? Does
no.
It show
no.
The hundreds and hundreds
no.
of cases he's sentenced over the years?
No.
And no deviation?
No. I mean, we have three cases here today, and I've got a couple other cases pending in this court right now, but no, it doesn't. That's not something we put on the record, and I don't know that I would ever do that. I mean, it would just be, it'd be very hard to go in front of your sentencing judge, take a pot shot at him like that, and then expect to get sentenced.
On the other end, even in this building, we have a former chair of the Sentencing Commission, or other judges who are on the Sentencing Commission, who may actually believe that we got it right, you know.
With the guidelines.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that poses a serious challenge, that you just have judges that don't have the will to exercise discretion beyond the guidelines. And that's a real problem. And I think that it's this court and the other circuits are going to have to find at some point a way to solve that problem.
Of course, you have judges like Judge Shabazz who sentenced prior to the sentencing guidelines.
I think for a little bit he did, yeah. It was a long time ago, though.
No, we did.
Thank you.
Good morning. Mr. Ruth saves his pot shots for here when he gets to the Court of Appeals, perhaps knowing that Judge Shabazz hasn't figured out how to listen to the arguments over the Internet. I respectfully submit that the limited remand is appropriate. And Kimbrough really did two things. Number one, it reaffirms Booker and says, hey, look, we really meant it when we said these guidelines are advisory, right? And part of that is Kimbrough says, and it's okay to reject those guidelines from time to time in fashioning a reasonable sentence under 3553. And it's just as reasonable, I respectfully submit to Mr. Ruth, for the court to accept the advice from time to time. A court can't be faulted, if for good reasons the court accepts the advice. The second thing that the Supreme Court did in Kimbrough is note that the original crack cocaine guidelines are perhaps less deserving of deference or respect because the original crack cocaine guidelines, the Supreme Court points out, were not based upon the strengths of the Sentencing Commission, that is, the empirical statistical analysis. So they thought, you know, in the note that crack cocaine kind of came to be at the same time the sentencing guidelines were being promulgated in the first place, they really didn't have time to conduct the empirical analysis. And in Kimbrough, the Supreme Court said, well, the sentence imposed on Mr. Kimbrough, 120 months, that was 48 months lower than the lowest point in the crack guideline, was okay. That it was okay for the district court to reject the advice, even a wholesale, for crack cocaine. Now here, this court has pointed out, our district court did not talk about Jointer and Miller and Hankton when he declined the disparity argument below. He just alluded to the case law of this court, which of course included those things. I think the fair thing is a limited remand where we send it back to the district court, and I don't know. Hopefully, Judge Shabazz will return to health, and he'll have an opportunity to hear this case. But to send it back and ask the court if the court would still sentence the defendant the same. So that's I think it's a fair thing to do. That's why the government filed the motion. Any questions from the court?
Yeah, I didn't know what his health was.
Judge Shabazz?
Yeah.
Fell down and hurt his shoulder, so he's out for a little bit. Judge Crabb is bearing the whole brunt of the for the Western District for a while. So that's it.
Thank you very much.
I'll be here all morning if you think any other questions.
You're handling all three cases.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Mr. Ruth, you have anything else?
Just very briefly, in addressing this business of we don't have 100 cases we can point to, and the question of does the judge have the will to deviate from the guidelines, and maybe the judge just agrees with the Sentencing Commission, maybe the Sentencing Commission got it right. The Sentencing Commission, on the date of the sentence in this case, this was after May 1st, before November 1st. On May 1st, the Sentencing Commission said, we got it wrong. And they proposed a lower guideline for crack. And they said, this is just the beginning. But it didn't officially go into effect and until Congress declined to change anything by November 1st. And we said, Judge, at least give us the two levels that the commission says is appropriate. And he said, I won't do it. Congress has the final say. I think that's powerful evidence that it isn't a question of exercising discretion and saying what's the right thing, what's the right sentence when you weigh all the factors. It's a judge who says, until it's a guideline, I won't do it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.